This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday 29th of March 2019. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. So let's begin with the usual regular notice, and the first is to say, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And as you listen to the recording, do remember that you can use the button on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase. www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click download. The recordings are listened to in date order, most recent first on the list. And so let's have a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Jane Rutter, and we're very pleased to welcome you, Jane. She's standing in for Claire, who unfortunately isn't too well.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Moving on to the news. This week, we are combining Westminster Diary with the leading headlines this week due to the decision of Steve Brine to leave the government. The headlines are, "Let's have a Plan B, MP quits over Brexit impasse." Then the honourable thing was to leave the government. And then station approach, sell-off plan. So let's have that first headline story from you, please, Jane.
Winchester's MP has said he quit the government after getting frustrated and going around in circles over Brexit. Steve Brine announced the news that he would resign as Public Health Minister late on Monday evening. It came as MPs backed a move to hold indicative votes to find a way to solve the current Brexit impasse in the House of Commons. Mr. Brine said resigning so that he could go against the government and support that move was the honourable thing in his letter to Prime Minister Theresa May. He said, "Leaving without a withdrawal agreement is not acceptable to me or in the national interest. I know the vast majority of my constituents in Winchester share that view." Speaking to the Hampshire Chronicle, Mr. Brine added, "You have to do something to have a deal. Let's have a Plan B." Theresa May doesn't have to lose control of Brexit. She has to recognise we don't have a majority in the House of Commons. You can't do executive-led government in the same way. She needs to recognise Parliament is strong in a hung Parliament. We're not stupid, we're not going to come up with unicorns. In the letter, he also said he still backed the Prime Minister and supported her withdrawal agreement, which has been rejected on a large scale twice by MPs. Mr. Brine told the Chronicle the decision to quit the government was not down to one thing. He said, "It's not like one event happened, it's just a series of things over the past 6 months. I was frustrated by us going around the same circle. There comes a point where I have to decide whether I'm complicit in proceedings towards a no deal." Although Mr. Brown's decision has been met with some support online, a member of his political party has hit out at the move. Senior Biddle, the Conservative candidate for the Worthies ward in May's City Council elections, said in an open letter sent to the Chronicle, "I feel I must write to you to express my dismay that you voted against the government last night in support of Oliver Letwin's bill for Parliament to take control of the Brexit process. I voted to leave the EU in 2016, having seen through work the dysfunctional political experiment that the EU and its sidekick, the single currency, have become. Brexit aside, not only have you sided with a Labour Party more akin to Marxist socialism than any we have seen in recent history, but you have supported a very dangerous future precedent, bringing into question our whole democratic parliamentary process. What we need is vision, not Parliament continuing to make a fool of the UK in international eyes. I do hope that you will use this responsibility you have won to obtain a clean Brexit, which allows the UK to maximise the opportunities it presents, not ties us indefinitely to the EU as a minor party." The political drama follows more than 1 million people marching through London on Saturday in support of a people's vote or second referendum on Brexit. Among them were a number of Winchester campaigners, including City Councillors Lucille Thompson, Jackie Porter, Jane Rutter and Anne Weir.
The honourable thing was to leave the government. Winchester's MP Steve Brine resigned as a minister after voting against the government over Brexit on Monday night. Mr. Brown resigned along with Business Minister Richard Harrington and Middle East Minister Alistair Burt. The evening left Theresa May's Brexit strategy in disarray after MPs dramatically voted to wrest control of the process. The pro-EU ministers quit the government to back a Commons amendment, enabling MPs to take control of Commons business to stage a series of indicative votes on alternatives to the Prime Minister's deal, due to take place as the Chronicle went to press. Below is Mr. Brown's resignation letter in full. "Dear Prime Minister, thank you for your time this evening here in the House of Commons to discuss Brexit and the next steps for our government and our country following last week's EU summit. As we discussed at length, I feel so passionate that leaving without a withdrawal agreement, commonly referred to as a deal, is not acceptable to me or in the national interest. I know the vast majority of my constituents in Winchester share that view. My view on no deal has formed as a result of countless public statements from business, public services, security services, and testimony from a wide range of my own constituents. That is, in addition to almost 3 years working inside government as a minister, including the last 20 months at the Department for Health. I want to pay tribute to the highly competent and professional team at the department, led by your outstanding Secretary of State, Matt Hancock, who've done everything they can to ensure medicines and medical supplies will be protected for patients, whatever form our exit from the EU takes. Health is without question the best prepared department in Whitehall, and the term deserve credit for that. But I realise, as you have said time and again, that you cannot wish away no deal. You only do that by having a deal. As you know, I've supported your draft withdrawal agreement twice and will do so again without hesitation. I think it respects the 2016 referendum result, moving us from a constitution to a treaty arrangement, and MPs of all parties and none should support it. Regrettably, however, it looks like a tall order for it to pass the House of Commons, so we are left in a position where the House must find a common position that can. My belief is that the only way to achieve this is by a series of indicative votes, and I want to support the amendment in the name of our colleague Oliver Letwin. At this stage in the endgame of the Brexit process, I was not prepared to vote against that or another amendment which again makes clear our wish to avoid no deal. So the honourable thing was to leave the government tonight and vote accordingly. Our party exists to serve this country and to deal with all the pressing domestic issues that matter to your constituents and mine. We have discussed many times how we want to get back to that agenda, and I will support you 100% in that endeavour as our Prime Minister. Thank you for giving me the chance to serve as Public Health Minister. It's a role I have cherished and enjoyed. and will carry on some of that work from the backbenches. Yours always, Steve Bryan, Winchester.
And now focusing on a more local issue. This one's entitled Station Approach Sell-Off Plan. Civic chiefs plan to sell off city centre land so developers can carry out a major regeneration project before renting it back, it has been revealed. It comes as Winchester City Council's Station Approach Committee rubber-stamped the outline business case for the project. That followed councillors debating the scheme, which aims to create Grade A office space near Winchester Railway Station and improve the public areas around it. Members of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee heard the Council has opted to get outline planning permission, an application for which is expected in the coming days, before selling the area to a developer. The meeting heard an application has to be submitted to fulfil the requirements of the £5 million grant bid to the Enterprise M3 Local Enterprise Partnership. Under an income strip model, a fund will buy a long leasehold interest in the site, and after 40 years, the property will then revert back to City Council ownership. According to a report that went before the committee, the income strip model would benefit the council as it would not be liable for construction costs and would not need to be involved in a potentially complicated construction project. However, it would mean the council would have to pay an agreed rent, even if it was not generating income by letting out the office space. Opposition Liberal Democrat councillors Lucille Thompson and Martin Todd raised concerns about whether the council would be able to attract tenants, with Councillor Thompson pointing out the country is, quote, facing a financial cliff edge, unquote, if there is a no-deal Brexit. Chris Cave, a partner at property consultant Vale Williams, reassured councillors that under their models, the numbers clearly say it's viable, but added, what happens on March the 29th, or whatever date, I have no idea. It seems business as usual. We are assuming we will get out of this mess. The meeting also heard pre-rental agreements would be sought with potential tenants, while a number of business leaders praised the scheme, including Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, who said, I think this development provides an opportunity to attract and retain businesses. We think it's a really fantastic opportunity. Ian Cherry, Head of Programme at the Council, also read a letter from Tim Bolton Carter, Director of Investment Firm Rathbones, which said he was, quote, immensely frustrated by the lack of office space in Winchester to expand into. Mr. Bolton Carter said, we are finding it increasingly likely we will have to look outside the city. We urge those responsible to move forward with the station approach as fast as possible. There were also concerns over the public realm aspect of the development, and in particular trees being felled, although there was broad cross-party support for the scheme. Conservative Councillor Victoria Weston said, we can't ignore the benefits of this project to the district. It's a positive development. It's one which is needed for Winchester and the Winchester district. There was also backing from Liberal Democrat Group Leader Councillor Lucille Thompson, who said, the scheme that we have in front of us is so much better than the last one, and we welcome that. Fellow Lib Dem Councillor Martin Todd said, we were absolutely right to kill the dreadful scheme that was supported by those on the other side, brackets Conservative councillors, but added, I would like to see the detail of the responses to the public input. I don't think it's acceptable that we should go on planning without the details of those responses. We would not be doing our jobs as councillors and members of the committee if we didn't do that. As previously reported, this is the council's second attempt to redevelop the Carfax site and station approach areas after a previous scheme was scuppered in 2016. County councillors killed it off because they considered its bulk and height too great.
Thank you all for those. And we move on now to the death notices. And Jane will be following with Christian comment. Gordon, Penelope Ann Gordon, passed away peacefully on the 14th of March.
Guest, Edward John Guest, passed in Winchester Hospital on the 17th of March.
Marsh, Louise Elizabeth Marsh, fell asleep in Winchester Hospital on the 20th of March, aged 94.
Meacham, Anthony, also known as Tony, Ticker or Ollie. Meacham, on the 13th of March, after a long illness, aged 85.
Thank you very much. And Christian comment with, from Jane is contributed week by the Reverend Philip Crinks. He's priest in charge of St Faith's Parish. And Jane, if you carry on, please.
Christian comment, reconciling nations. At 7:20 p.m. on November the 14th, 1940, bombs began falling on the city of Coventry. The main targets were the city's weapons factories and industrial infrastructure. But at around 8 p.m, an incendiary bomb hit Coventry Cathedral and it was set on fire. Volunteer firefighters were on duty that night. They put out the first fire, but more fires followed. By the time the all-clear sounded at dawn the next morning, two-thirds of the buildings in the city of Coventry had been damaged. One-third of the factories had been completely destroyed. The cathedral was a burnt-out ruin. About 30,000 civilians had taken to surrounding country or to air raid shelters and were saved. Sadly, more than 500 civilian lives were lost. 1 month later, the RAF launched its first incendiary intensive raid of the war on the city of Mannheim. 10 days after that, on Christmas Day 1940, the Provost of Coventry Cathedral, Dick Howard, made an extraordinary BBC radio broadcast from the ruins of the burnt-out cathedral. Howard said that after the war, Britain should work with those who had been enemies to build a kinder, more Christ-like world. He gave his intention physical form. He had the words, "Father, forgive," inscribed on the walls of the ruined chancel. Three medieval nails, which had been blasted free of the ancient structure, were formed into a cross. The cross of nails became the symbol of reconciliation between Coventry, Dresden, Berlin and Kiel in the late 1940s. The community of the Cross of Nails grew into a movement of 150 peace and reconciliation workers across the world. Conflicts, as Dick Howard saw, needed reconciling. Our nation has seen much conflict in the past, internally and with other nations. Conflicts, although not thankfully violent ones, are still all around us today. Conflicts arise for all kinds of reasons and proceed in all kinds of ways. But what matters most is how conflicts end. Will the conflict end in a process of reconciliation, avoiding a cycle of hurt and harm? Will the parties be able to remember truthfully the causes and course of conflict? Will they be able to recognise each other's common humanity? Will there be a spirit of repentance, of renewal and forgiveness? Remembering, recognition, repentance, this is the path of reconciliation. Every Friday in Coventry, a member of the community of the Cross of Nails goes into the ruins of the old cathedral. At noon, they begin a litany of reconciliation, which uses as a response, "Father, forgive," the words which Provost Howard had inscribed on the burnt-out walls. "The hatred which divides us from each other, Father, forgive. The covetous desires of people and nations to possess what is not their own, Father, forgive. Our indifference to the plight of those in need, Father, forgive. The pride which leads us to trust in ourselves and not in you and your Son, Jesus Christ, our Saviour. Father, forgive."
Thank you, Jane. And letters to the editor next. And again this week it's a very mixed bag of letters and we've selected 12 for you. Richard, will you start us off with the first, please?
Yes, and it's headed simply MP Resign.
Uh-huh.
Steve Bryan has resigned his position as a minister in order to support a takeover of government business by MPs seeking to stop Brexit, despite having voted for Article 50 in the full knowledge that a failure to agree a withdrawal agreement would legally result in leaving without one. in this very publication, over a period of more than 2 years, he's extolled his desire, despite voting Remain, to support the Conservative manifesto upon which he was elected, and the PM in fulfilling the democratic majority of the people to leave the EU. I have written previously, following a report in The Telegraph, that his public words differed from his private actions. He has been disingenuous at best with the people of Winchester and Chandler's Fort, and if he's any decency at all, should resign the whip and his role as our MP. He can then take his chances as an independent. Alternatively, the local Conservative Party should commence deselection procedures. I've asked the local party chairman to clarify those procedures for doing so. Ray Green, Alexandra Terrace.
And this one is entitled, Why Resign? Why did Winchester's MP Steve Brine feel the need to resign his junior health minister job at the height of the Prime Minister's troubles in the House of Commons on Monday night? After all, he's been a very loyal supporter of the government until now. He must have been, to get a ministerial appointment. On the BBC Radio 4 Today programme on Tuesday, John Humphreys failed to get a meaningful answer from Mr. Brine. So why would Mr. Brine want to put his head above the parapet and upset his boss at this critical time? I wonder if, like many of us, he senses a general election on the horizon. If so, he'd better hope that there are not too many of his constituents adhere to the old adage about sinking ships. Nigel Burwood, Cutforth Way, Romsey.
This letter from Tom Hilborn is entitled MP's Passion. Sir, I want to commend Steve Brine for his resignation on Monday to help pass the Letwin Amendment. It was clear that Mrs. May's deal was never going to command a majority in the House of Commons, and trying to force it through was an ill-thought-out strategy. I attended a curry night with him on Thursday, organised by Christchurch, where he showed how passionate he was, not only for constituency casework, but also for his role as a public health minister. It is clearly not an easy decision for him, but I think he is part of a growing number of MPs who are starting to put the nation first rather than their party. I do wonder how all this is going to end, though. A no deal would disrupt the peace in Northern Ireland and be hugely detrimental to the economy, so I cannot see this as a viable option. The world has changed since 1973, and the UK is no longer the main player on the world stage that it once was. My prediction will be that we'll end up with a customs union with the EU. The Leave side won the referendum, so not leaving is clearly an affront to democracy. But surely, if we want to unite the country, we should listen to the Remain side as well, who want to stay close to the EU. That's Tom Hilborn from Gillingham Close, Kingsworthy. Gillingham.
And an open letter from Senior Biddle. Sir, this is an open letter written to Steve Brine. I am your City Council candidate for Winchester Worthies Ward. I'm also your constituent. I feel I must write to you, express my dismay that you voted against the government on Monday in support of Oliver Letwin's bill for Parliament to take control of the Brexit process for the government. I share what must be your dismay at Theresa May's leadership and handling of Brexit, but I cannot support this decision. I voted to leave the EU in 2016, having seen through work the dysfunctional political experiment that the EU and its sidekick, the single currency, have become. The destruction wrought on southern Europe's long-term growth and the imbalances between the northern Europeans, and particularly Germany, and the rest, can only end in tears, and we are best off out of it, with the hope of building a fairer European vision and trade alliance in the future. Brexit aside, not only have you sided with a Labour Party more akin to Marxist socialism than any we've seen in recent history, but you have supported a very dangerous precedent, bringing into question our whole democratic parliamentary process whereby government and cabinet governs. You've made a general election more likely, which could very well propel Jeremy Corbyn into power, given the unpopularity of this Conservative government, and ironically, I believe a no-deal Brexit more likely. On Brexit, as you categorically state on your website, you were, along with your colleagues in both main parties, elected on a manifesto committed to supporting the referendum outcome from 2016. This bill is a blatant attempt to remain in the EU or support a Brexit so soft that there is no point in leaving, and gives up all of the benefits of leaving, cedes our vote at the table, and keeps us permanently in the control of many aspects of the EU, for example, the so-called Norway option. Crucially, we will cede control of financial services, and you should know anyway that Frankfurt and Paris are determined to destroy the City of London and its domination of financial services, as well as the city's very significant contribution to the UK GDP. Senior Biddle, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
We now leave the subject of Brexit and politics, thankfully perhaps, and this one is entitled Bin Obstructions.
It was lost something that
notice
really
no connection. It was interesting to read that the City Council's neighbourhood services and special maintenance teams have been giving the city centre a spring clean, Chronicle, March 21st, and that the council portfolio holder for the environment realises the importance of keeping the city looking at its best for residents, businesses and visitors. For the last 9 months, wheelie bins belonging to a neighbouring street have been obstructing the pavement in Worthy Lane. And several of us have written repeatedly to our local councillors asking for this problem to be addressed. Despite their efforts, nothing has yet been done. Pedestrians are faced with moving the bins out of the way or are forced into a busy road, and they present a hazard for users of buggies and mobility scooters. Worthy Lane is in a conservation area. It is a route into the city centre which is used by coachloads of tourists and foreign students as well as local people. The bins are unsightly and messy, yet the council has been unable to solve the problem of forcing their owners to retrieve them and keep them off the public way. Residents of Hyde Street tell us that they were threatened with £1,000 fines if they left their bins on the pavement. As far as we know, this sanction has not been applied here. One wonders how the council can think of undertaking large building developments when they are unable to solve such a simple problem. This from a number of authors, all from Worthy Lane in Hyde.
People's vote. Sir, last Saturday my wife and I marched in London in support of revoking Article 50. We were just two of over a million people marching who desperately want to see Britain remain in the EU. It is clear that the lack of support both within Parliament and throughout the country for Theresa May's deal suggests that those MPs still supporting the deal should think again. MPs were voted in to represent their constituents, and it is clear that the majority of Winchester voters wish to remain. At the march, I saw two placards bearing out my principal reason for being part of the EU. They pointed out that the EU has been the most effective peace treaty the world has ever seen. Whilst there are many other reasons for being a member, that has to be at the top of the list. The EU is by no means the perfect institution, but remaining is the only way to have the representation to make the necessary changes. It has become all too clear that by leaving with either a soft or hard Brexit, we will still be forced to hang on to the coattails of Europe without being able to influence it. We've heard the phrase, the will of the people, bleated by dozens of politicians over the last 2¾ years as a reason for leaving. Based on what? £350 million for the NHS on the side of a bus, Farage's poster of a massive flood of immigrants. The 2016 vote was based on wholesale lies and misinformation. That is not democracy. It is a shameful act of political vandalism. The country is now better educated on the issues surrounding membership of the EU. Parliament has shown itself unfit to manage this crisis. It is time we, the people, had a truly meaningful vote. And that's from Gareth Davis in Colebrook Street, Winchester.
This letter headed Not Listening comes from councillors Brian Lamming and Malcolm Price. So we are great supporters of a new sport and leisure centre, but with a full range of facilities that are not now included in the new centre. If Councillor Ashton had listened to the sports clubs and accepted their points, we'd not be in this position. Had he listened to managers of other centres and the national sporting bodies, he'd be able to better understand where his assumptions went wrong. Even the current business plan he produced shows only 90,000 visits per year. I beg your pardon, 900,000 visits per year, whilst the new operators show a minimum of 1 million. With the inclusion of extra four courts and spectator seating, this would in itself lead to an increase in numbers. The extra space would enable new sports to be included, and those people would then be attracted to use the other facilities. He is, however, correct in that at peak times there's a maximum number of people who can use the centre. His argument fails as he bases his figures on 60% occupancy at off-peak times. The successful centres in this country run at 80%. Whilst we have visited other centres and discussed their operation, Councillor Ashton has been visibly missing. We organised a trip to one centre and invited three cabinet members to one of the country's most successful centres. This invitation was turned down as they had no interest in going. What a missed opportunity. Councillor Brian Lamming, Lib Dem councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, and Councillor Malcolm Price, Lib Dem councillor for the Worthies Ward.
And this letter returns to the problem of accumulated rubbish, entitled Zero Tolerance. About 1 month ago, I phoned Winchester City Council to report what appeared to be the accumulated junk from a works vehicle cab. Whoever had left it at the end of our cul-de-sac must have driven in with a specific intention of offloading their rubbish. I took photographs, determined the name of the driver, his home address and work address, from invoices dumped amongst the litter. I phoned Winchester City Council to report it. The young lady to whom I spoke assured me that someone would get back to me possibly within 3 days, but definitely within 10. No one phoned, no one visited, and the litter began to blow about. I then filled in the appropriate online form provided by Winchester City Council and reported my findings again. I had confirmation that my report had been received, and I heard nothing more. I went to fix my street and entered a report outlining the problem and mentioned the shocking state of our cul-de-sac, owing to the fact that it has not been swept since last November. I received confirmation that my report had been passed on to WCC, nothing more. After waiting a fortnight, I disposed of the soft drink tins, sandwich wrappers, cardboard cups, rubber gloves, and a selection of torn paper myself. I can only conclude from this experience that the zero-tolerance approach to fly tipping, boasted of by WCC in the About Winchester publication, does not apply to the cul-de-sac in Fairdown Close. This from Daphne Deer of Fairdown Close in Winchester.
Shenanigans. Sir, there are many similarities between the shambolic Conservative government in Westminster and its equivalent in Conservative-run Winchester. However, whilst the constitutional crisis in Westminster makes news around the world, the constitutional shenanigans in Winchester were witnessed by just a single member of the public at the full council meeting on March the 19th. The City Council's constitution has now been extensively revised. One of the worst revisions is that full control over the city's three major multi-million pound projects, Silver Hill Station Approach and Bar End, has been delegated to just three members of the Cabinet in each case. Full council has been bypassed, and the opportunity for scrutiny and for debate effectively dead and buried. Another deeply worrying decision, made because the Conservative group was whipped to vote en bloc, was the rejection of the Lib Dem proposal to extend the disclosure requirements of councillors to include membership of bodies such as the City of Winchester Trust, the Rotarians and the Freemasons. The Lib Dems think that the public is entitled to know these things. The Conservatives don't. The result of these and many other revisions, including the extension of authority delegated to officers, is that democracy in Winchester and the integrity of governance has been given an unprecedented kick in the teeth. Theresa May can only dream of having the unfettered power Caroline Horrell has in Winchester and the ability to hide things away. Things will only be corrected when a new administration gets elected, which fortunately the public is still able to decide. And that letter's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor for Alresford and Itchen Valley, East Stratton, Winchester.
This letter from James Anderson is entitled Misplaced. One does indeed hope that this newspaper promotes an open and diverse debate. Derek Cheshire, Chronicle Letters, March 21st. How ironic, then, that the gentleman's letter comes as an attempt at the exact opposite. Personally, George Hayter is not my cup of tea, but I see no evidence for suggesting that he's a racist Nazi sympathiser. Playing the man and not the ball answers nothing. Immigrants to New Zealand are there legally. Illegal immigration is almost unknown because New Zealand does indeed have a wall in the form of 1,000 miles of ocean. Hungary has erected a wall to protect its and the EU's and UK's borders with Serbia and Croatia. Russia and China deploy other means against illegals, mostly harsh punishments. The idea of a borderless world is a lovely romantic dream. It takes only a few moments' thought to reveal the dream as leading directly to anarchy and mayhem. We would truly be up the creek if we didn't know what the local population was going to be next week. As with most things in life, some structure and order is essential. Confabulating legal with illegal immigration, misrepresenting the situation in New Zealand, and suggesting that illegals who have passed up multiple opportunities as they crossed Europe to Dover have only one chance by getting to the UK, there is no substance to these arguments. I'd only sup with Donald Trump with using a long spoon, but it's hard to argue with his stance on illegal border busting. Stopping it is his job. James Anderson writes Close South Monster.
Coming back to another subject I talked about earlier, this is about the station approach redevelopment, entitled Anywhere. Winchester City Council proposes to develop around the station area. What is proposed is monolithic, huge, any place architecture. This could be Basingstoke or Bracknell. There was a public display and meeting about this on February the 26th. Winchester City Council also produced a board with panels for the public display at the library for us to see. All of the buildings designed are uniform, a lot of cubes, though there are some arches in the building immediately behind the registry office. It is square buildings with no features that are outstanding in any way. No attempt made to provide any details and agreeable features around the buildings, all of which are simply rectangles. See how much better the old registry office immediately in front is, with an inclined roof, and the windows, as opposed to being rectangles, have curves and outstanding bricks around them. The windows are recessed. The place where the walls of the old registry office change direction also have outstanding brickwork. None of the skill and building techniques that went into the registry office have the architects Lifshutz Davidson Sandilands, the proposed architects for the station approach scheme, attempted to follow. Phil Gagg from Winchester Action on Climate Change stated in his response, bracket, and I couldn't put it any better, close bracket, the general feel of the development is oppressive. The style of the buildings has nothing to do with Winchester. It is an insult to claim this design respects Winchesterness. The building frontages are dead. The detailing is banal. The development will repel people getting off the train and discourage those in Winchester from using it. The pedestrian square will be polluted with traffic fumes and restricted in size. It will never be the type of public square being created in front of the stations throughout the country and will detract from the experience of travelling by train to and from Winchester. It is overdeveloped and swamps the existing buildings of far more merit. the station, the registry office, the record office, the shops along Stockbridge Road. The style can best be described as stolidly monotonous faux grand. A term could be coined post-Ceausescu undecorated. The sort of building an Eastern European dictator might have produced in the 1950s and 60s. It seems we are being punished for rejecting the previous proposals. The lack of animated frontages in the drawings is reinforced by diagrams that limit them to the area directly in front of the station and by bus stops. This letter from Rupert Pitt, Church Lane, Colden Common.
Skylarking on the South Downs. Sir, a conversation about the motocross at Matley Estate. Grandpa, what is that noise, that man shouting? It's called a tannoy, my love, and he is shouting about some people riding motorbikes around the field up the road. And is he playing the music and making the roaring noise? Yes. Grandpa, when we were here before, there were those birds singing. Why can't I hear them? They were called skylarks, and they were looking for places to have their nests in the fields. But, Grandpa, there are now lots and lots of people in the fields with camper vans and things. Won't that frighten the skylarks? Yes, I did write to some people called the South Downs National Park and said that, but they decided that motorbike races were more important. Grandpa, when I'm as old as you, will there be skylarks? Probably not, my love. But there will probably still be noisy motorbikes, so that's all right, isn't it? That's from Teacher Jones, Lane End, Cheriton.
Well, thank you very much, everyone, for reading that sometimes entertaining group of letters from the public. We're moving on now to your say. And after EU leaders agree to delay the Article 50 process, postponing Brexit beyond March 29th, the Chronicle's roving reporter asked people what they thought. Could you give us those comments, please?
Surely, Roz. Entitled Your Say. After EU leaders agreed to delay the Article 50 process, postponing Brexit beyond March 29th, we asked people what they thought. Alex Colford, 23, accountant of St Crossroad, Winchester, said, "I don't care anymore. I've completely lost interest in the whole thing. I don't check the news updates. What will be. It's a mess." David Woodward, 57, aircraft engineer of Main Road, Aylesbury, said, "The whole thing is a fiasco. You couldn't write it. It's all become a bit of a joke, really. If they can't vote for a deal, what does that say about our government's future?" Ian Piper, 50, train driver of Southampton, said, "It's a betrayal of the British people. We voted to leave, and that's exactly what should have happened by now, but it hasn't. It's all very frustrating." Jodie Lancaster, 20, student and university open day worker of Stanmore Lane, Winchester, said, "It's all a bit of a faff. The public should have been given more information before voting, because nobody knew this mess was even a possibility."
Peter, do you
have
you?
Spot, got,
do you want to put your own comment on the end of that
one? I think
one?
Few people would disagree that the mess we're in now. But my own personal view, and we'll know by the time this is this goes out, is that the agreement will fail this afternoon, which is we'll then leave them in Parliament in a place where it's got to decide what it wants and what it doesn't want. So, frankly, if they don't decide, then heaven knows what's going to happen, and nobody knows. Even the great Laura Koonsberg of the BBC doesn't know. So, I think we can leave it at that.
I think I'm going to underline that as something of a dilemma.
You're probably right. A dilemma is not about. It's
thank
not about
you very much,
it.
Peter.
We'll know this time next week.
Yes,
maybe.
We will indeed. Hopefully, thanks very much. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And you could even drop in when you're in Winchester. And moving on now to editorial comment. And this week the editor writes on the dangers of confirmation bias. He says, Winchester MP Steve Brine has resigned his post as junior health minister, no longer able to reconcile his views on Brexit with the demands of being a minister. People who only a few days ago on social media were castigating him for his stance are now praising him. No longer, apparently, is he betraying the wishes of people in Winchester who voted to remain in the European Union. His case is an example of an issue raised by New Forest MP Sir Desmond Swain, who spoke this week about rising intolerance of political opponents deriding as traitors, liars and cheats. In a blog, Sir Desmond said, there is definitely a rising intolerance, an unwillingness to accept that other people who disagree have simply reached a different conclusion. Mr. Brine is the elected representative for the constituency of Winchester and Chandler's Ford. It is well to remember that he is not a delegate, as the Remainers would wish. Pro-Remainers conveniently forget the fact that in British democracy, our MPs are supposed to exercise their personal judgment on issues. If MPs slavishly follow the wishes of the people, we would for many years have carried on executing people within the walls of Winchester Prison. This intolerance is fuelled by social media and its confirmation bias. People with strong views only pick up on things that confirm their opinions. It is highly dangerous. And we have Jane again now reading first person this week.
This is by Joanna Lewis and it's Sorrow at State of Nation. Like many of my generation, I'm a pop-up churchgoer, a fan of pick and mix. I love Buddhism's respect for life, Hinduism's pantheon of go-to deities, whilst the glory of the natural world feels like being in an outdoor church. But when the going gets tough, only one place will do for me, Winchester Cathedral. I found myself there last week, taking advantage of the kindness of strangers. You can write a prayer and have it offered up in one of the daily intercessions, a Christian form of prayer for others. I was there as my father is in hospital again. Writing a message at these moments represents for me a combination of primordial life insurance, a lucky charm, and a source of comfort. Whatever gets you through the night, I say. Part of the comfort comes from the sense of resilience and compassion which centuries of belief have built into the walls of this great symbol of faith. Whether you believe or not, in times of upheaval, stress and anxiety, something which can steady the mothership is appealing. The sense of history as a continuum and humanity as survivors of far worse than we have ever faced is humbling. As a historian of empires, I'm always drawn to the memorials in the cathedral of former imperial generals, governors or explorers. There's always something new to gaze upon. Last week, it was the marble relief of a weeping Britannia, a young female figure holding her head in sorrow with the paraphernalia of war resting on the imaginary coffin of the man whose life of duty, adventure and Empire State building had ended. Predictably, perhaps, I see her as a symbol of the sorrow many feel at the state of the nation. Has there been a time when we feel more cut in two? Have we ever witnessed so much division in political parties, between Parliament and government, within communities, between old friends and among families? Tempers and language are combusting. Empires are like fires. They usually go out slowly. Economies decline whilst institutions and cultures linger. Wars can speed up that process. Technological transformations, which leave them behind, can be terminal, though not always. But it is usually internal factors like group conflict which are the deadliest. Disagreements about how to move Britain forward in a post-imperial globalising world cannot be resolved easily. If economists and political scientists can't come up with a solution, how the hell are the rest of us supposed to? So we should not be surprised by the anger, impasse and frustration over Brexit. At its heart are two highly different views of how economic security can be achieved in the long term, based on very different, increasingly extreme and highly unequal personal experiences of life in 21st century Britain. Imperial history warns us not to be consumed by internal division, but to react more smartly. We need empathy towards those who hold different views. We need a national form of relate counselling, and future policies must show more explicitly how they will support long-term those who feel that they have lost something much more visceral than a debate. An obvious way to bring people together is always a shared threat. The ticking time bomb of sleeping ISIS cells and violent extremism from within should sharpen our thinking. However, since the Leave referendum, climate change and global warming, linked to overconsumption and overpopulation, have also assumed a menacing form. Working together on a national and supranational level on a reversal effect, forcing Russia and China to act too, is vital. Yet we must remember too that Britain is geographically a relatively small island. We must act now to protect our distinctive eco-heritage, landscape and rivers. Last week, lost among the Brexit bickering were scientific predictions that Britain's population expansion will create water shortages by 2040. Holy cow, time to get the prayer mat out.
Richard is going to read the Belgarum item for us. There's only one this week. And it's about, Sarah Russell, principal of Peter Simmons College.
That's right, who went 16,000 miles to meet the parents.
Well,
head teachers often go to feeder schools to meet potential students. Sarah Russell has made such a visit. Hers was 16,000 miles, as the Peter Simmons College principal has been to the Falkland Islands in the South Atlantic. She met prospective and past students and the parents and students of currently boarding at the college. Peter Simmons acts as a sixth form for Falkland students who travel to the UK to board and continue their education. Miss Russell spent time meeting Year 10 and 11 students and their parents, met representatives from the Islands Education Office, Falkland Islands Community School and the Training Centre in Stanley, and was treated to a tour of East Falkland Island sites and nature reserves. Miss Russell said, Peter Simmons has a long history of over 30 years providing educational opportunities to students from the Falkland Islands. Visiting the islands helps to develop a better understanding of where our students come from, their experiences, and the best way we can support them during their time with us. Travelling 8,000 miles from their friends and family to further their education shows immense courage and resilience, and I'm always impressed by the enthusiastic way they embrace college life. It was wonderful to meet so many former Simmons students, emphasising the importance of our long-standing links with the community there and the responsibility the college has to continue this unique link. The islands themselves were absolutely beautiful, and I was lucky to have a little time to explore. Highlights included the beautiful windswept scenery, king and rockhopper penguins, and the historic Dockyard Museum in Stanley.
Thank you, Richard. And my favourite item now is historical items. I'm going to kick off with 200 years ago, on Monday, March the 29th, 1819. The 5th day of April next is the latest period at which bank tokens are allowed to pass. After that time, the bank will not be allowed to receive them. And the next item here is: a meeting of the gentry clergy and inhabitants of this city and its vicinity took place at the Guildhall, pursuant to two requisitions to the mayor. The first, signed by the merchants trading on the River Itchen, for the purpose of considering a communication from Mr. Hollis, the proprietor, respecting his intended bill for raising the rate of tonnage on coals and other goods conveyed on said river. Thank you, Richard. Peter's next. Sorry.
Okay, thanks, Ros. 100 years ago, Saturday, March the 29th, 1919. The annual service of the Winchester Diocesan branch of the Mothers' Union was held in the nave of Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday afternoon, the preacher being the Reverend Canon Garbett, Vicar of St. Mary's, Portsea. There was a large congregation. Among the clergy present were the Dean of Winchester, the Archdeacon of Winchester, the Archdeacon of Surrey, Canon Braithwaite, Canon Vaughan, Canon Martin, Canon Causton, and Minor Canon Pertherham. And the second topic is Winchester on Tuesday will say farewell to the remaining units of the US Army. We were informed officially last evening that the American camp is to close down on Tuesday next, and that on the morning of that day the troops will march through the city to the railway station, where they entrain for Liverpool. From a remark the mayor casually made, we doubt, however, the military band will be available to head the march.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, March the 29th, 1969. A report to be presented to Winchester City Council on Wednesday evening shows the cost of the first phase of the central traffic plan is expected to be £674,525. This is the phase which comprises the western gyrations with the new access provisions to the railway station and the new bridge over the railway at Newborough Street. The total estimated cost is made up of £267,200 for roadworks, £77,325 for bridgeworks and £330,000 for the acquisition of land. It is described as the most difficult, most expensive and most critical phase of the whole central traffic plan. A report from the council's executive anticipates that the city council will bear 12% of the capital cost, with the ministry providing 75%. That's only 87. What happened to the other bit? Anyway, secondly, enough money for the shelter campaign to rehouse a family, £320, was presented by the boys of Montgomery of Alamein School, Winchester, to a representative of the shelter at their morning assembly on Tuesday. The boys had just started to raise the money just before Christmas, initially intended to raise £80 to move an elderly woman into better accommodation. However, the Christmas venture grew, and after raising £140 by a sponsored walk, they decided to press towards the £320 mark to rehouse a whole family. The headmaster, Mr. D. Beecham, commented, "Every penny does represent their efforts."
And 25 years ago, Friday, March the 25th, 1994, we have two articles about various aspects of housing. Kingsworthy villagers have been celebrating victory in their 2.5-year battle with developers Lang Homes after the dismissal of a plan to build a 300-home estate. The Secretary of State for the Environment, John Gummer, rejected as harmful to the countryside the proposed development on a greenfield site at Woodham's Farm, Springvale Road, after a 7-day planning inquiry last June. But Winchester City Council leader John Taylor, who led the fight to stop the Lang plans, has warned that the war may not be over. The drawing up of a new district local plan for Winchester over the next year will allow developers another chance to gain permission to build in the Worthies. Last Thursday's announcement of the rejection of the Langholm's appeal marks the latest phase in a 30-year battle between villagers and developers over the 63-acre site at Woodham's Farm. Parish Clerk Mel Cummins said, Everyone's delighted. We've been expecting a decision since Christmas and we were hoping it would go this way, but of course we were never sure. Anonymous local campaigners summed up the popular mood last weekend by hanging a 3-foot by 2-foot banner at the bottom of Nations Hill, exclaiming in large letters, "We've won!" Mr. Taylor praised the work of the parish councillors in mobilising local opinion to save their village environment. And the second article is, Winchester city councillors were at each other's throats this week as hostile debate broke out over the future of housing management. Plus ça change. The council has to submit to competitive tendering by April 1996, but instead of attempting to go for an in-house bid under compulsory competitive tendering, CCT, policy and finance councillors agreed to choose voluntary competitive tendering, VCT, as their preferred option. If this goes ahead, the council won't put in a bid to keep the housing management service under its own control, but will voluntarily pass it to a private company or housing association. But the controversial plan, backed by the city's chief housing officer, Jeff Atkinson, transformed the normally composed council meeting into a battlefield. Housing Committee Chairman John Cloyne, Labour, was furious not only at the voluntary privatisation of the council's services, but at the fact that discussions had been kept secret up to now. At one stage, the meeting was hushed into embarrassed silence when Mr. Cloyne slammed his papers on the table, crying, "I am getting really annoyed. We are talking about the future of the whole council." Tempers also flared as personal attacks flew across the room. Mr. Cloyne's political comrade-in-arms, Patrick Davis, launched a verbal assault on Democrats Brian Collin and James Wagner, while Mr. Collin accused Mr. Davis of pathetic ramblings.
My goodness, that excitement! Thank you all for those. And we're going to move on to what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. There's quite a lot going on, but I've just picked out a few of them for you. And it's predominantly a lovely mix of music genre. And I'm going to start with something that's happening tomorrow. That's the 30th of March. It's the Wainfleet Singers are combining with the Newcastle Massbach Choir and the London Mozart Players to perform Elijah. It's on at the Cathedral and tickets are available. It's at 7:30 p.m. That's tomorrow, the 30th of March. The box office number is 857275. Or you can just turn up. And I should have said that the conductor was Andrew Lumsden, and I can also add that our respected and admired guest speaker today is singing in that performance. Well worth going along. Well, with the Wainfleet Singers, yes. Not solo, I think, Jane.
Not solo on this occasion.
Anyway, that's probably worth a good attendance if you can manage it. Then the next item is entitled Messiah as an Opera. Winchester City Centre Church will be the venue for an operatic dramatisation of Handel's Messiah. St. Lawrence's Church on the Square will host the performance on Friday, April the 5th at 7 p.m. That's St. Lawrence Church. And I'll just read on a little. In the Merry Opera's version, 12 strangers come together to seek spiritual comfort in their struggle to understand the world. By singing together in the church, they inspire each other in their faith and look to the future with hope. The tickets are £18 and they're available from the parish office or by filling in an order form in the church, that is the Church of St. Lawrence in Winchester. There are concerts in Romsey. A regular event is the Tuesday lunchtime recitals. That's every Tuesday in Romsey Abbey, 1 p.m. to 1:40 p.m. it says here. It's an unusual time. an informal half hour or so of good music, free retiring collection in aid of Romsey Abbey Music. And then on Saturday, April the 13th, a Requiem concert by the Romsey Singers in Romsey Abbey at 7:30 p.m. The conductor is Philip Lawson, and the Requiem highlights are by Verdi, Fauré, Rutter, Lloyd Webber, Barber and Britten. Tickets are available in advance of the price of £14, £12 reserved and £10 unreserved. And you can get those from the Romsey Tourist Information Centre. That's Church Street, Romsey. It's telephone number 01794 512987 to avoid any more confusion. 01794 512987. And then different kind of music altogether. Folk legends are celebrating 50 years, and they are Steel Eye Span and Space Oddity, Suspicious Minds, Pinball, Wizard, Whole Lot of Love, Come Together. 1969 could easily be said as a vintage year for music, the end of a decade that changed the world, and the introduction to one that would prove equally inspirational. But it also saw the birth of a band that would start to electrify traditional music. And as they celebrate their 50th anniversary, Steel Eye Span are showing no signs of slowing down. And they will be at the Winchester Theatre Royal on April the 14th at 7:30 p.m. And you can book your tickets from the box office. That telephone number is 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. And finally, on the music score, Motown Magic returns to Winchester Guildhall. Now, if Motown is your thing, this is one not to miss. It is a fabulous show. Music fans from across the world are invited to the biggest party of the year on the Unstoppable Magic of Motown show, which steams into Winchester on April the 12th. I mean, this breathtaking show has spectacular numbers such as Ain't No Mountain, Dancing in the Streets, My Girl, Blame It on the Boogie, my favourite, Uptight, Endless Love, Ma Cherie Amour, and All Night Long. That's just some of the music that you will hear. And they're going to hit the stage at the Guildhall, Winchester, on April the 12th. Doors are open at 7 p.m. and tickets cost £27. Telephone number to book is 01962 848 129. 848 129. That's another lovely piece of music for you to take your pick from. And finally, it says here a much-loved comedy vicar is back on the stage. And the worthy players are well into rehearsals for their May production of The Vicar of Dibley. The director of the worthy players, Martin Pettigrew, was determined that audience should have the opportunity to enjoy all the wonderful characters of the original TV cast again. Now, this show is on. The worthy players' performance dates are May the 10th, 11th, 17th to 18th, and all at 7:30 p.m. in the Jubilee Hall, Kingsworthy. Tickets are on sale now and can be purchased from www.theworthyplayers.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no spaces. www.theworthyplayers.co.uk. And I should add that the original scripts and characters are permitted for use by Tiger Aspect Productions. So this is going to be quite a unique show. Well recommended. Well, that's all I have for you on the What's On. And I'll just move on to the general news. But here is a reminder for you, because we go into British summertime this weekend. So remember to set your clocks 1 hour forward on Saturday night before you go to bed. British summertime begins on Sunday, March the 31st. Hurrah! And here are the lighting up times. And they're starting on Saturday, the 30th of March. The sun will set at 6:34 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 3rd of April, the sun will rise at 6:37 a.m. and will set at 7:41 p.m. So we are moving on to general news now, and Jane has the first article for us. Thank you, Jane.
Hampshire businessman takes Team Sky. The Hampshire billionaire, who built a petrochemical empire, could now be making a bid to conquer the world of sport. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, founder and chairman of chemical giant INEOS, has taken over Team Sky Cycling and has been linked with the bid for Chelsea Football Club. Ratcliffe, regularly billed as Britain's richest man thanks to his fortune of £21 billion, is already bankrolling Sir Ben Ainslie's Portsmouth-based America's Cup sailing team to the tune of £110 million. Team Sky, which has captured 8 Grand Tour titles during its 10-year tie-up with the satellite broadcaster, will become Team INEOS from May the 1st, a day before the start of the Tour de Yorkshire. Team Principal, Sir Dave Brailsford, said, "In Sir Jim Ratcliffe and INEOS, I know that we have found the right partner whose vision, passion and pioneering spirit can lead us to even greater success on and off the bike. It heralds the start of a hugely exciting new chapter for us all as Team INEOS." Mr. Ratcliffe added, "Cycling is a great endurance and tactical sport that is gaining ever more popularity around the world. Equally, cycling continues to mushroom for the general public, as it is seen to be good for fitness and health, together with easing congestion and pollution in city environments. INEOS is delighted to take on the responsibility of running such a professional team." INEOS began life in Lyndhurst, where it still has registered offices, and Ratcliffe, who lives in Bewley, fought a long-running planning battle with the National Park Authority over proposals for an opulent waterfront mansion. He spent 6 years trying to persuade the NPA to allow him to redevelop a secluded 2-hectare site overlooking the Solent at Thorns Beach, near Bewley, which was occupied by a 2-bedroom bungalow. His persistence finally paid off in August 2017, when permission was granted.
France honours Anne with a medal. A pensioner has been awarded France's highest honour for her service during the Second World War. Anne Ponsonby, 94, of Dalhousie Nursing Home in Headbourne Worthy, said she was thrilled after being presented with the Légion d'Honneur. During the war, Anne trained as a wireless operator and supported the Special Operations Executive using Morse code to receive and send messages to the French Resistance. The medal was presented by the Commandant, Brigadier Philippe Lorimer. She said, "Anne, on behalf of the French government and the people of France, it's our privilege and huge honour to be the people who formally present you with your Légion d'Honneur medal. The sacrifice of your whole generation means that my generation and my children's generation has grown up in peace, and for that we will be eternally grateful." Anne said, "I'm thrilled and honoured. It's a beautiful insignia and I'll wear it with pride. The war was a testing time for both France and the United Kingdom, and together we achieved the liberation of France and set Europe on the road to peace, which we've now enjoyed for over 70 years. I'm so proud to have played my part in helping the French nation recover its liberty." Anne currently has 9 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren.
Building work starts on new leisure centre. Civic chiefs have ticked off another key milestone in the construction of Winchester's new £38 million leisure centre. Key figures in the Bar End Sports and Leisure Centre project descended on the Garrison Ground, the location of the new facility, to start the construction process. As previously reported, councillors gave final approval to get the project underway last month, despite concerns from opposition Liberal Democrats over the size of the sports hall and the finances of the scheme. The new centre will include a 50-metre pool, separate training pool, hydrotherapy suite, fitness suites, treatment rooms and an 8-court sports hall. Among the partners gathered at the groundbreaking ceremony were City Council leader Caroline Horrell, Hampshire County Council leader Roy Perry, Deputy Vice Chairman of Winchester University Neil Marriott, and the Pinder Trust trustee Christine Cunningham. Both Winchester University and the Pinder Trust, as well as Hampshire County Council, have committed to investing in the project. Speaking at the event, Councillor Horrell said, "Top-class sport and leisure facilities for Winchester have today become a reality. I'd like to thank all those who have been involved in this fantastic project so far, to all those who have worked tirelessly to bring the project to this stage, and to all those who have given their support to help make it happen." Richard Poulter, Managing Director at the Centre's builders, Wilmot Dixon Construction, added, "We are delighted to be starting work on this fantastic new facility for the local community. Having constructed many leading sports and leisure facilities, we know the huge positive impact these centres have on the local community they serve. We are thrilled to be part of the team." There was also praise from Angus Sladen, Chairman of Trustees at the Pinder Trust, who said, "The Trust has been associated with hydrotherapy since the early 1970s, and we are delighted to be helping to fund the hydrotherapy suite at the new centre. It will be a superb facility which will serve people in the community with disabilities, as well as many others who will benefit from it."
Zoo planting trees for animal fodder. Over 7,000 trees are to be planted at Marwell Zoo to provide food for resident animals and habitat for local wildlife. In collaboration with the Woodland Trust, the zoo's team based in Coldon Common will seed around 8 acres of forest. Once it begins to mature, animals such as giraffe, okapi and bongo will be provided with twigs and foliage known as browse, which they naturally eat in the wild. Dr. Ollie Salska, animal nutritionist at Marwell, said, "Browse has a number of health and behavioural benefits for animals. It provides the much-needed fibre required by these species to maintain a healthy gut and efficient digestion. It helps promote healthy teeth and gums and stimulates the natural process of rumination in ruminant species. Behaviourally, it helps keep animals occupied and prolongs feeding time." The project is part of the Woodland Trust's flagship More Woods scheme, which began in 2010 and has seen more than 2,075 hectares of woodland and the planting of more than 2 million trees across the UK. The charity has supplied Marwell with 5,625 trees, a mix of alder, field maple, goat willow, small-leaved lime, oak, silver birch and wild cherry, and 1,450 hazel shrubs, plus canes and spirals for protection as they become established. Luke said, "There's a growing interest in planting trees and shrubs for browse, partly because of the savings that can be made on feed, but mainly because of the nutritional and medicinal benefits it brings to the animals. Willow, for example, is nature's aspirin, containing salicin, the active ingredient in the familiar bathroom cabinet remedy. We've chosen a mix of species which will readily coppice and provide plenty of annual regrowth, as well as plenty of palatability to tickle a bongo's taste buds or satisfy the hungriest giraffe. We've also chosen species similar to those in woods next to the farm to ensure suitability for soil type, hydrology and maximum survival rate. The trees will also benefit the environment, helping to improve soil stability and air quality, slowing the flow of floodwater and providing a home for wildlife." Dr. Martin Wilkie, conservation biologist at Marwell, said, "Not only will the production of forage for the zoo be a huge benefit, the creation of woodland will generate diverse woodland habitat. The varied species mix and structure will benefit insect pollinators, birds and other wildlife communities. The rough grassland beneath will provide refuge for small mammals, supporting our resident barn owl population."
Smile, Winchester named as UK's happiest place. Despite the heavy traffic, Winchester has been named as the happiest place to live in the UK. A new study conducted by Royal Mail has identified the most content residents in England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales. Winchester topped every other city in the country, with the study pinning such happiness on the local authorities' high earnings, a high reported sense of well-being from residents and low levels of deprivation. Winchester residents regularly cite the closeness of the countryside to the city centre, the good transport links, excellent schools, low crime, the beautiful architecture and unrivalled heritage as reasons for living in the area. Others prefer to mention the rocketing property prices and increasing awareness of pollution caused by traffic congestion. A spokesperson for Royal Mail said, "This new study takes a look at the areas across the UK sparking the most joy. For people across the UK looking to live in or visit the happiest places, there are plenty to choose from." The findings are based on an index composed of 8 measures relevant to people's happiness. In England, the South East dominated the list, with 5 other local authorities from the region ranked in the top 10.
Pals to Walk Historic Way for Health Charity. 2 Hampshire men are set to walk more than 100 miles from cathedral to cathedral in aid of a national charity. Winchester resident Jem Musselwhite is hoping to raise £2,000 for Nerve Tumours UK, an organisation that has supported his 9-year-old granddaughter, Lily Burridge, who has neurofibromatosis. Lily was diagnosed with a genetic condition which causes tumours to form on nerve tissue at the age of 5. Jem will join forces with his long-term friend, Rich White, on the 10-day trip from Canterbury to Winchester, using the 120-mile-long historical route, the Pilgrim's Way. He said, "As 2 guys in our late 50s, we've wanted to do a significant walk for many years. The condition, which is very close to my heart as it affects my beautiful eldest granddaughter, is drastically underfunded in the UK, with nursing support being withdrawn and diminished all across the country. We've been doing lots of training walks and we'll give it our best shot over the next 10 days. The pair have known each other since starting work together in the construction industry in 1976. Rich, who lives in Ampfield, is now working in property development and Jem is the director of his own company based in Winchester. Jem Musselwhite Limited is an architectural consultancy that provides plans for local authority approval. Along the route, the duo will stay overnight in pubs with accommodation." Jem said, "Rich has planned everything like a military operation. We even have a Pilgrim's Way walk card we have to get stamped at various points along the route. We'll keep ourselves entertained with our usual good banter and sense of fun. The pub stops will also be very entertaining." Jem and Rich will leave Canterbury Cathedral on Friday, April the 5th, with Winchester Cathedral marked as the final destination. Fundraising for the walk has nearly reached its target of £2,000.
Scam warning. Police are asking Hampshire residents to be aware of a telephone scam in which victims are persuaded to give away their bank cards and PIN numbers. A recent incident was reported in a village near Winchester. On March the 14th, a 92-year-old man from South Wanston received calls from someone claiming to be from his bank. He later handed over his card to someone who called at his home, which was used to withdraw £500. This comes after 2 incidents were reported in the New Forest on March the 12th. Around £1,200 was taken from an 85-year-old woman in Ringwood and £500 from a man in New Milton, both by a similar technique. A Hampshire Constabulary spokesperson said, "We would like to take this opportunity to remind people that banks will never ask to disclose your PIN number in this way. They will not send a courier to collect your old bank card either. If you get a call like this, please hang up and use a different line to report the incident via 101 or call Action Fraud on 0800... Oh, I beg your pardon. Action Fraud on 0300 123 2040. That's Action Fraud on 0300 123 2040. 2040.
Money to tackle homelessness. Hampshire authorities are to benefit from a multi-million pound funding boost aimed at reducing the number of people sleeping rough. Community Secretary James Brokenshire announced a more than £8.5 million fund for the South East, which will help councils in Test Valley, Winchester, Fareham and the New Forest fight homelessness. The money forms part of the government's £100 million rough sleeping strategy and will be used to fund rough sleeping coordinator roles, add new or additional outreach services and extend existing or provide new temporary accommodation, which will include night shelters and hostel spaces. Among the councils to benefit from the funding are Test Valley, Fareham and Winchester, who will share money with Basingstoke, Dean Hart and Rushmore. Following the announcement, Mr Brokenshire said, the £100 million-backed rough sleeping strategy sets out this government's blueprint for ending rough sleeping for good. We're taking the necessary steps to make that happen, already providing 2,600 additional beds and 750 more support staff for the most vulnerable people in our society. The news comes after it was announced earlier this month that Winchester City Council will benefit from £177,000 together with Test Valley Borough Council to support tenants and landlords in a bid to reduce the number of people sleeping rough. The money, which will also come from the Ministry for Housing, Communities and Local Government's Private Rented Sector Access Fund, will also be put towards encouraging landlords to offer longer leases to those in housing need.
City on track over emissions target. The City Council says it is on track to beat a target of reducing carbon emissions by 20% by 2020. It follows 4 years of work by the Winchester City Council to reduce water, gas and electricity consumption at its sites. That has included replacing the lighting systems at the Tower Street multi-storey car park and city offices with low-energy LED lights, as well as using low-energy technology in all new council homes under construction. The council is also installing solar panels at its offices in Colebrook Street, which at its peak will generate 48 kilowatts of electricity. A spokesman added plans are being investigated to installing a 50 kilowatt panel on the roof of the depot site in Barfield Close. It comes as the council's carbon footprint report for 2015-16 showed the authority produced 4,646.3 tonnes of carbon dioxide, while draft figures for 2017 and 2018 indicate total carbon emissions of around 3,700 tonnes, showing the council on track to hit its 20% reduction target. Winchester City Council portfolio holder for environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "We are committed to reducing our carbon footprint and being a green council focused on reducing emissions, and contributing to our district's low carbon economy." As previously reported, the council has announced its 12 actions for becoming a low carbon council, including buying the most energy efficient equipment and fittings for buildings and introducing renewable energy initiatives in council owned or as community projects.
Chewing gum bins set for city streets. Civic chiefs are set to consider plans next month to tackle the amount of chewing gum being dropped on Winchester's streets. Winchester City Council says it hopes to agree plans to install new gum recycling bins in April after discussions with company Gumdrop. It would see special recycle bins installed in the city to encourage members of the public to throw away gum rather than drop it. The gum would then be collected by the company and used to produce a number of sustainable products, including reusable hot drinks cups. Portfolio holder for the environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, confirmed quotes had been received by the City Council and final details are being agreed.
We'll look forward to that. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of our recording for you of the Hampshire Chronicle this week. Before you go, though, we've got another reminder that Mary Davis is the person for you to call if you have any problems at all with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711 998. And we'd like to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers here today. Jane, thank you for joining us this week. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, thank you.
And Richard.
Goodbye.
Peter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And again, thank you very much for listening. Hope you have a good week. Until next time, goodbye.